The Week in Philly on KYW News Radio is recorded and edited every Friday afternoon. For the latest updates to any of the stories you're about to hear, listen to KYW News Radio anytime on your smart speaker or the Odyssey or iHeartRadio apps. Visit KYWNewsRadio.com or follow us on social media at KYW News Radio.
This is The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio. Sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Welcome to our weekly look at the stories that have been making headlines in Philadelphia and the region. My name is Matt Leon, and over the next hour, we will bring in KYW News Radio reporters to break down the stories you have been talking about. The Philadelphia School District fills a key role with regards to implementation of their big facilities plan.
She'll become the head of the district's transition office.
Mike DiNardo will have that story. Then Matt Coughlin will tell us about charges in connection to the murder of a Delaware County couple back in 2022.
Authorities enhanced audio on that video and say they can hear someone saying, "Mom."
Nigel Thompson then stops by to talk about how Philadelphia is handling the World Cup.
I think all of it is really just making Philadelphia one of the focal points of this World Cup experience.
Jim Melwert will tell us all about his experience at the Transplant Games of America.
It's a group of people who just understand what's really important.
The 76ers used their first round pick in the NBA draft on a guard from Alabama. 76ers fan Tim Jimenez will give us his take on the pick and the state of the franchise.
I'm not tired of it because I'm a sicko and I keep coming back year after year no matter what.
And then Connor Barkon tells us about a survivor type YouTube show in Delco.
Fans really loved it.
All that is ahead over the next hour. I hope you'll join us for The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, and we will get started right after this.
You do not need to leave the School District of Philadelphia to go join some other school community. You don't need to do that.
Well, it may be summer, but we start this edition of The Week in Philly talking schools. This week, Philadelphia School District Superintendent Tony Watlington announced a key appointment. And for more, let's bring in KYW's Mike DiNardo. Mike, who is Dr. Shakira Worthen-Canty, and what is her new position?
Matt, she's a 27-year veteran of the Philadelphia School District. She had been an assistant superintendent since 2021. And as of July 1st, she'll become head of the district's transition office. That is the office that will oversee the district's $3 billion facilities master plan. That is the one that will close 17 schools and modernize 169 others.
Building off that, what exactly will this job entail? Like, what's the day-to-day going to look like?
Yeah, the next school year will be a planning year. Any closures wouldn't happen until the fall of 2027. But in the meantime, students and staff and families, they're going to have questions. And the first thing that Shakira Worthen-Canty is going to do is set up structures at each affected school, whether they're closing or being modified or receiving students from other schools, structures of people who can answer questions about the transition. That is job one to start.
There are big changes coming, both good and bad for them, you know, the way that they view it. So there's excitement, there's nervousness, so they are reaching out already.
At each school, there's going to be a team of parents, students, and staff that will coordinate with the transition office. Superintendent Tony Watlington all along has said that students and families in schools that are closing would receive red carpet support. He noted that 90% of those students would be going to schools with better reading and math performance than the ones they came from. Longer term, the office will oversee the transition of students moving to new schools over the 10 years of the plan. Again, 169 schools are being modernized, and many of them, there will be questions like, where will students go when a classroom is rehabbed or new gyms or labs are being built? The announcement of Worthen-Canty's appointment was made at Patterson Elementary in Southwest Philadelphia. That is a school that is going to have one of those renovations and an expansion. It's going from a K-4 to a K-8 school. Matt, it's getting a new classroom building, a new cafeteria, and a new gym under their $45 million renovation.
Once this runs its course, I assume she would just shift back to her role as an assistant superintendent?
Not necessarily. We don't know. I would say that's unlikely, actually. This is a 10-year facilities plan. It's also likely that someone would be tapped to replace Worthen-Canty as the leader of the Opportunity Network of Alternative Schools in the district. That was her previous job.
Also this week, the school district's Summer Achievers program kicked off. What's that?
It's a city-run program that not only gives kids a chance to keep up with their academics in the summer, but it also allows them to have some fun. The old definition of summer school was for kids in danger of being left back, but now kids are going to summer school because they want to. At 70 schools in the city, kids go for reading and math enrichment in the morning, and then in the afternoon, they do things like basketball, frisbee, field trips on Fridays, that sort of thing. We visited the program at Anne Frank Elementary in the Northeast this week. Anne Marie Constable is the city's extended day, extended year coordinator there. And she says this is about combating the summer slide.
It keeps their brains going. And I think the socialization, a lot of these kids would be home by themselves, not having any socialization or any activity. And it gives the kids routine. And at this age, you need that routine.
The program runs until the end of July.
Now let's switch gears, talk a little SEPTA. You did a story this week involving drones. Always fun. What's happening here?
SEPTA police have been using drones for almost 10 years now. They're deployed in situations where, say, someone is reported to be on the regional rail tracks and it's not safe for an officer to go there, or there's a report of a person with a gun and a drone is sent up to provide real-time intelligence to responding officers. Well, that technology advances quickly and those drones are starting to show their age, said Deputy Police Chief James Zugi.
We're replacing a lot of those. They were getting antiquated and batteries are dead and that kind of stuff. And it got kind of too expensive at some points to kind of fix it.
SEPTA is using a federal grant to spend nearly $260,000 to buy 5 new drones. Zugi says with the new technology, Matt, the drones will be better able to coordinate with SEPTA's existing virtual patrol command center.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. That's KYW's Mike DiNardo joining us. We are just getting started on this edition of The Week in Philly. We've got a lot more to bring you. Stick around.
We don't know yet if the trial will begin to heal the void in our lives and the ache in our hearts. But we do know that the detectives, the DA's office, and we, the family, have done everything possible to achieve justice for Rita and Rick.
We are back on The Week in Philly, and this week on Wednesday, charges were announced against a woman for the 2022 New Year's Eve murder of her parents. The woman is connected to a bizarre cult-like group. There's a lot to unpack here, and let's bring in KYW's Matt Coughlin. Matt, you covered this week. First off, what happened back on December 31st, 2022 in Chester Heights, Delaware County?
What we understand is on that evening, Richard and Rita Zyko were in their home late at night. A car pulls up. 2 people get out of the car, approach the home. There's video of parts of this. The 2 people are kind of hard to identify from the video. Authorities enhanced audio on that video and say they can hear someone saying, "Mom." And then the 2 individuals go in the home and Richard and Rita Zyko end up being shot to death.
And you mentioned one of them says, "Mom." Who is the woman that's charged here?
So that's Michelle Zyko. She's their adoptive daughter, a 33-year-old woman, by all accounts, very intelligent, a biology-focused data scientist of some kind, worked in the hospital industry here in Philadelphia for a little while. During the COVID pandemic, she ends up moving up to Vermont. She has a vacant piece of property up there. She takes a box truck and refits it with oxygen tanks to be hermetically sealed for her to live in. So that's the kind of intelligence level and sophistication we're talking about.
And she is connected to this bizarre cult I referenced in the opening, the Zizians. Who are they?
From what we can tell, they are mostly data scientists, computer scientists. They have kind of an apocalyptic view of AI and the future. They form around an individual by the name of Jack Lasota. Jack is another computer scientist living out in California at one point. He develops these concerns about AI. He comes to the conclusion that we're best off if we can divide the 2 halves of our mind through sleep deprivation, separating ourselves into both male and female genders. And, you know, it just kind of unravels from there.
So you mentioned that they heard somebody on the tape say, "Mom." Michelle Zyko is the adoptive daughter. Was that all they used to connect her to this murder, or what other evidence have they presented to this point?
So this is a 3.5-year investigation. So there's a lot of moving parts to it. Another thing they found was shell casings at the scene of the murder in Delaware County that matched shell casings they found at Michelle's home up in Vermont. There was a firing range there at the back of the property. It's a very rural area of Vermont. The third thing they did that they pointed out, they were able to look at messages that Michelle shared with other members of the Zizians and her friends, where she talks about mistakes that were made at the time of her parents' deaths, notably leaving shells behind and a few other things. So they feel this all comes together. The way the DA, Tanner Roos, described it, Michelle, they believe, is the person that goes into the home. There's one other person that goes with her. She takes her mom into her childhood playroom, and there she, according to the DA, has her mother executed.
Do we have any idea as far as a motive, and do we know, is the cult the driving force here, or is this still all kind of unclear?
Well, it's all kind of evolving as we go. Michelle is implicated in a shooting death in Vermont where members of the group exchanged gunfire with a Border Patrol agent. That agent was killed. One member of the group was killed. A third member is charged with homicide up there in Vermont. But as far as motive goes, the DA was reluctant to kind of tie it directly to the group. We do know that the morning of the murders, Michelle's mother, Rita Zyko, sends her a text message expressing her sorrow, her sadness, that mother and daughter were living a very estranged life from one another for quite some time. And hours later, she ends up dead.
And what's next here?
It will be interesting to see how this plays out. The DA again says he's not sure whether the charges elsewhere will come first or not. You know, this group is connected not only to that homicide in Vermont, but also to a homicide out in California, where several members are charged in connection with the attempted and also the eventual murder of their landlord. Meanwhile, in Western Maryland, Michelle faces charges of firearms violations and trespassing. So the DA says he's not sure what's going to come first.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. It's a lot to process. Thank you, Matt. KYW's Matt Coughlin joining us. We need to take a break. We will continue with more of The Week in Philly coming up. Don't go anywhere.
It's The Week in Philly, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
You got to pinch me. At the end of the day, after the anthem, after we win, lose, draw, whatever, it'll be all worth it. That's for sure.
It's always been my dream. This first see Ivory Coast play, second come to a World Cup game, right? So, you know, having this game here, it really means the world to me.
Don't listen to the internet. Like, Philly's actually a really good place. And it's different than a lot of cities.
Welcome back to The Week in Philly, and the World Cup has been front and center here in Philadelphia for the last couple of weeks, and it has been a lot of fun. For more, let's bring in KYW's Nigel Thompson. And Nigel, you've covered a lot of the impact the World Cup has had on the city. What are your main takeaways here?
I'm trying to think where I should start. I think first and foremost, you know, just seeing the amount of fans of other countries that are here, like flooding Philadelphia streets. I remember walking around the city before the Ecuador-Ivory Coast game. And everywhere I felt like you looked in the city, you saw an Ecuador jersey. And, you know, before the Brazil and Haiti game, everywhere you looked, you saw a Brazil or Haiti jersey. And then before the France-Iraq game, there was French and Iraq jerseys everywhere. So I think the amount of people from around the world that are coming to the city to enjoy these games, and not just coming to enjoy the games, but coming to experience Philadelphia for what it is, I think that from what I've seen, it's been a massive, massive success for the city and a big boom.
It really does seem like Philadelphia has done a much better job embracing and catering to soccer fans than a lot of other cities, like as far as the transportation, Lemon Hill, the Fan Fest. Like, do you agree? And what have you seen specifically that you think has really worked here in Philly?
I think just the kind of an overall buy-in from everybody at the city level, everybody, I think, on the business level, like everybody is doing something World Cup related. Like you have the bars banding together to create World Cup watch parties for every game, every day. You have, obviously, Lemon Hill is a massive, massive area where fans, and I think it might be Of all the ones that are around the country, all the fan fests that are around the country, I think it's probably one of the biggest and drawn the most people. Another thing that I've noticed is like you're seeing, as you walk around the city, you're also seeing just the signage that's up of directing people to where they have to go for the games, where they can go for fan experiences. I mean, I live in Fairmount, which is right down the street from like where Lemon Hill is. And there's arrows from even in front of where my apartment is down to where the fan fest is. And I just think that that overall just sort of buy-in from the city, the overall just kind of embrace of the city has really worked. And it's a lot different here than it is in other places.
Somebody said that they felt that Philadelphia was approaching this with a long game in mind, getting people to fall in love with the city, not gouging them for cash at every turn, like I think we've seen at some cities. The fan fest is free. Like all these things are just getting people to come in and embrace the city with the idea that they have such a great time, they're going to come back.
As you mentioned, like the free fan fest, you know, restaurants are doing deals. You know, bars are doing deals for World Cup games. SEPTA didn't jack its prices up like they did in Jersey. Yeah, I mean, I think all of it is really just sort of making Philadelphia one of the focal points of this World Cup experience, not just for the city, not just for the region, but for the country.
We talked about, you referenced the FIFA Fan Festival in Lemon Hill. For people who haven't been there, what has the vibe been like? And if you go, if people are still interested in going after hearing this, like what can you do? What's available there?
The one thing is that I haven't done yet, but I really want to, is you can go get in line and make a bracelet that pretty much has different insignias or, you know, knickknacks of like different countries. And really it's a way for you to meet other people and you can trade little like signets that go on the bracelet. That's a cool thing. There's drinks, there's food, there's games for kids. And obviously there's, you know, massive screens for you to watch all the games. I mean, I think FanFest has been, I'm not being biased just because I live near it, but like FanFest has been probably one of the most fun things that this city could have done. It holds thousands of people. I was there when Team USA played Australia. There were thousands of people in the blazing heat watching that game.
One of the things we've tracked here at the station is you seem to have a lot of jerseys and you've worn a different country for many of your shifts. Is this something you've pursued specifically for the World Cup? Like, if, have you gained that you want to have different these jerseys available?
Oh, this is a World Cup thing. This is me embracing the World Cup being here. I very much look at this as, you know, this is something that I may never see again in my lifetime in the United States, in Philadelphia. I'm here to embrace all that it brings, all the people it brings, all the experiences it brings, all the games, all the fun. So, like, I mean, that's what it's about. I heard a really good quote from somebody I interviewed at FanFest before one of the U.S. games, and they said that the World Cup was kind of what this country needed. You know, it's kind of what we needed because of all the outside things that go on. I mean, it's almost like what our country needed, what the world needed, because, you know, people from all over the world are coming here and we're meeting each other over sport, something fun, nothing stressful. And we're seeing that, like, in all that, there's a lot, we have a lot more in common than the media or our government or anything tells us. And I think that's really powerful. And I think that's something that we all can kind of carry with us outside of these games, this tournament.
KYW's Nigel Thompson joining us. We're going to step away and we will have more of this edition of The Week in Philly coming up right after this.
I had a heart transplant 12 and a half years ago. Today, so far, I've done a 50-yard freestyle race, a 100-yard breaststroke race, and I've got one more coming out. It's a 50-yard breaststroke race.
This is The Week in Philly, and the Transplant Games of America wrapped up earlier this week. They were out in Denver this year, and KYW's own Jim Melwert was out there for them, and he joins us now to talk more about them. Jim, for those unfamiliar, what are the Transplant Games of America?
Well, Matt, the Transplant Games of America are held every 2 years, kind of an Olympic-style competition for organ recipients and living donors with donor families, families whose loved ones became donors after death, there to cheer them on. And while it is competition, it's about so much more than that. The way I kind of describe it is whoever wins gets polite applause. Whoever comes in last place and struggles to finish gets just an absolute roar of support and applause. I mean, you can imagine seeing a double lung recipient finish swimming the 500 free, you know, swimming 20 laps of a pool with transplanted lungs. And many times these recipients were so close to death, they made peace with it before getting notified of an available heart, liver, lungs, or kidney for transplant. In many cases, they went from not being able to get out of bed or having trouble walking across a room to now being able to run a 5K or swim 500 yards.
So how did you get connected to the transplant games?
I donated a kidney to my Aunt Jean, in 2006. We celebrated 20 years this year. And like many kidney donors, I've had zero adverse effects and I'm also doing well. And it's amazing to see what I was able to do for her with obviously a major surgery, but really, you know, it's no worse than a C-section to recovery.
I still remember when you had the operation to take the kidney out. Remind me, who was the only person from the station who visited you in the hospital?
It was you. It was Matt Leon. Not only the only person from the station who visited, but the only person from the Philadelphia region who wasn't directly related to me. Matt Leon.
Oh, shucks. So how many years have you gone to the transplant games?
My first games were in 2014 in Houston, and then I was able to go in 2016 in Cleveland, 2018 in Salt Lake City, all of those competing as a living donor, and also through a partnership with Gift of Life reporting for KYW News Radio, which is just amazing to share all these, be able to share all these stories. But since 2018, I haven't been able to get back until this year. Obviously, it was great to be back to see everyone, not only all the friends I've made with Team Philly, but also living donors and recipients from across the country, reconnecting with them. It was like college friends where you can be apart for years, but when you get back together, it's like you don't miss a beat.
You went this year as a member of Team Philly. You didn't compete, but you have competed in the past, right?
Yeah, I've competed in all the other years I've gone. This year, because swimming and track are such long events, I wanted to kind of be able to bounce around more and see other. There's so many other things. There's, you know, darts, cornhole, Texas Hold'em poker, ballroom dancing, a singing competition. And I haven't had the chance to really attend those in past years. So not everyone's an athlete. So to just see everyone using their gift of life for whatever, you know, their natural gift is, if it's singing, if it's dancing, you know, it's just an incredible event.
Was there anyone you met specifically this year that really made an impression on you?
So many amazing people. I wish that we could go through all of them. Just to highlight a few, Brandon Beckham donated a kidney to his mother. This was the second transplant games. Brandon was everywhere, cheering on team members, coaching, helping out with the kids, always had a smile on his face, one of the biggest supporters out there.
I'm having so much fun. It's just such a wonderful atmosphere. I just wish it was a couple more days.
Keith Gerald is a heart recipient, another big supporter of other team members.
So many people had their organs for 20 plus years. You know, some people are just starting out. So to see the beginning of someone's journey, the ones I was standing in, for me, it's enriched. It's motivating.
My favorite part of the games, though, is watching the kids compete. These are children who have been through more in their short lives than most of us, fortunately, will ever deal with in our entire lives. So here's 10-year-old Brandon Leathers, whose smile not only lit up Team Philly gatherings, but also the entire city of Denver.
It's really cool because sometimes I'm like, oh, I just want to be like other kids. But I'm like, dang, there's other kids who are just like me. And plus, I told my dad, wait a minute, I get to do stuff what's funner in life than my other friends because they don't have a kidney transplant, so they don't get to go here and stuff. And I'm like, wait, that's a really good advantage for life.
And Matt, one final thought. We talked about donor families, but organ donations double blind, similar to adoption, where the donor family and the recipient separately have to agree to meet or to communicate before they're connected. And so many times, because there's so much emotion, you know, survivor guilt and the sadness of a death, the two sides don't meet. So for the donor families to see a heart recipient out there competing and using that gift, it gives them kind of a sense of what their gift meant to someone they don't know. And same thing, you know, with that survivor guilt of knowing that you're alive because someone died. A heart recipient, for example, can connect with a donor family. And even though it wasn't their direct donation that saved their life, and you see those connections just happen on not only a daily basis, like an hourly, minute by minute, it's just incredible.
All right. Thank you very much, Jim. That's KYW's Jim Melwert joining us. We need to take a break. We will have more of the Week in Philly coming up right after this.
The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers, proud sponsor of the KYW News Radio studios. Bring on the fun and bring home a new Honda with a great deal on your favorite Honda vehicles and finally take that road trip you've been dreaming of. Now's the time to check out the Honda Civic at HRV from Honda, the 2025 Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com best value brand.
With the 22nd pick in the 2026 NBA Draft, LeBaron Vilon Jr.
He was pretty high on our board. I'm surprised a little bit he was there.
They got two great guards, and I feel like I fit in with those guards, you know, playing at that fast pace and, you know, that level of basketball.
Welcome back to The Week in Philly, and the NBA Draft was this past week. And for a look at how the 76ers approach things, let's bring in our resident 76ers fan, Tim Jimenez. And Tim, the 76ers picked 22nd in the first round, and with that selection, they took Alabama guard LeBaron Vilon Jr. He averaged 22 points and 5 assists a game last season for the Crimson Tide. What'd you think of the pick?
Yeah, man, I really like the pick. Vilon is someone who was projected to go high, or potentially in the low teens or so. So to have a talented player like that, considered to be maybe one of the better guards in the draft, fall to you, I think it's worth a shot in taking him. Now, I do understand the frustration from Sixers fans who are worried that they got another smaller guard instead of someone who maybe fits the starting lineup better. But the way they're structured, you know, I think you still got to take shots at adding top-tier talent, and Vilon has that potential met.
Do you think he's a guy that can contribute right away, kind of going along with that? And the Sixers got this pick by trading away a young guard named Jared McCain. And it seems to me they used the pick on a guy who reminds me a little bit, at least, of Jared McCain.
Yeah, there's some similarity there in terms of the shooting. And I think there's a good work ethic there and competitiveness in Vilon and in someone in like McCain. But I really think Vilon is a guy, and some of the experts we follow say the same thing, that he could potentially take his game to the next level. Now, you mentioned some of his stats from last year. How did he get there? Well, his shooting numbers at the rim and behind the arc actually took a big jump from his freshman to sophomore year. So again, if this is a guy who works hard, if this is a guy who's dedicated and really wants to compete, maybe in that Maxi Ejko model, he could get a lot better. So I think he's a guy who can contribute right away and also be someone who can be a piece going forward.
Now, this was the first draft for the Sixers' new president of basketball operations, Mike Gansey. He replaced Daryl Morey, who was fired after the Sixers were embarrassed in the second round of the playoffs by the eventual champion, New York Knicks. And we haven't had the chance to talk about Gansey's hiring. What are your thoughts, this draft aside, but overall on bringing him in?
I think it was a good move. You know, first things first, he's not the son of a Colangelo. That's huge. He also has this reputation. He had a good reputation with the Cavs, so it's not like he was only sought out by the Sixers or other teams that were looking at him as potentially taking over their front office. So I think he's someone who has a good reputation that could potentially be really good. I think it's going to be good to have more of that young and up-and-comer perspective here in Philadelphia. But, you know, he also has help from someone as experienced and accomplished as Bob Myers. So I think it'll be good.
Looking at this Sixers team, they've got a lot of big contracts. Joel Embiid, Paul George, Tyrese Maxey, VJ Edgecombe doesn't have that big contract yet, but he's locked in as a core piece. Like, obviously you add Vilon, but is this team really going to look much different than last year, you think? Like, is there any room to make significant differences from what we saw a season ago?
Significantly different, it's hard to say. I wouldn't say it's likely, but you never know. Paul George is the one contract, the big contract that you could potentially move. He only has a couple years left. But really, I think the big thing is just to add depth to this team. You know, they can't waste roster spots. I'm a fellow old millennial, Matt. I'm a big Kyle Lowry fan. But you need guys who you can throw in any night, get players who can play, you know, not just guys who just are going to sit there on the bench.
There was as much excitement as I can remember for the Sixers after they came back and won that series against the Celtics. But then that goodwill was summarily set on fire as they were destroyed by the Knicks in the second round. Like, if we're going to basically see the same roster for the most part coming in with the same coach, Nick Nurse is still the coach. Like, as a fan, what is your level of excitement? Are you looking more at the, boy, if they can add depth and what we saw against the Celtics, this could be special? Or no matter what, second round is the ceiling and I'm tired of this. Where are you on the fan scale?
I would say somewhere in between. I'm not tired of it because I'm a sicko and I keep coming back year after year no matter what. No matter how heartbreaking the year prior was, I keep coming back. I think it's one of those things where you look at the league and the way things are, where you've had different champions how many years in a row. Of course, none of them have been the Sixers, and the Sixers haven't come close, but it's showing there's more parity in the league than ever before. No real dynasty at the moment. Yeah, you have teams like the Spurs and Oklahoma City who are really young and can be really good. Of course, the Knicks just won. They can be good for a long time. But because there have been these different champions every year, I think the Sixers, you just got to at least stay in there and compete. And at the end, you know, if you're in the right spot and you get hot at the right time, you just never know. So I'm in the middle. I think you kind of look at it both ways, where you just play out this Embiid situation and Paul George, so you don't have to give away draft picks to get rid of those guys. And then you also look forward to the future in Maxey and Edgecombe and maybe Filon as building blocks for the future.
All right. Thank you very much, Tim. That's KYW's Tim Jimenez joining us. We need to step away. We will have more of this edition of The Week in Philly coming up. Coming down the stretch on this edition of The Week in Philly, and the show Survivor is a true staple of reality television. Really, it's one of the shows that helped create the reality boom. And this week, we learned about a Survivor show with, shall we say, more of a local feel. For more, let's bring in KYW's Connor Barkon. And Connor, what is Survivor Delco?
Well, Matt, it's a YouTube channel that was created by a film major from Delaware County that is producing a Delco version of the show.
I'm currently walking in an offset of the Delaware River where Native people settled thousands of years ago. Today, it serves as a backdrop for the ultimate social strategic game. This is Survivor Chester Creek.
And to be clear, while we just discovered this week, like, this is season two, right? So what was featured in season one?
So this is season two. Creator and host Chris Herry was surprised by the success of the first season because fans really loved it.
I thought it was just going to be a fun weekend to air to my friends and family, and then it just kind of took off after that. We're airing season two now, and we just got done filming a season three.
So the first episode of season one has nearly 3,000 views, and the premiere of season two, which aired this week, has more than 1,000 views. Harry tells me that he received about 70 applications from people to participate in the third season. So, you asked what was featured on season one. That version of the show was called Survivor Cherry Tree Woods. Harry spent about $1,500 of his own money to try to create challenges like vertical puzzles and relay races for 18 participants. And I do think what's important to talk about here is the production quality, because for what it is, for what the show is, the production quality is very good. Harry edits the footage himself. He spends a lot of time preparing the camera shots just to make sure that everything's captured.
Is there money on the line?
There is money on the line for participants. Participants are competing for a $750 prize. And the Survivor Delco game itself takes 39 hours as opposed to 39 days, which is how long participants were stuck on an island on the show Survivor itself. There's not quite money on the line for Harry, right? He's still trying to figure out ways that he could possibly monetize this without violating any intellectual property laws. He said that there is some talk about starting a podcast. He's coming up with maybe an idea to create a GoFundMe. And he says that he's starting to hear from some companies about possible sponsorship opportunities as well.
Is this something you would compete on?
Normally, I love games like this, but personally, I have never really been a faithful Survivor fan, so I feel like I'd be taking a slot away from somebody who really loves the show. However, I am very impressed by Harry's ability to bring his vision to life and navigate the success of his idea that sort of surprised him. There are a lot of really cool people doing incredibly interesting things in our own backyard, literally.
Very nicely done. Thank you, Connor. That's KYW's Connor Barkon joining us. And that is going to do it for this edition of The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. This week's episode was produced by Brian Seltzer and Sabrina Boyd-Circa. My name is Matt Leon. Thanks for listening and enjoy the rest of your weekend.